future. Hope for ourselves, hope for our world. I want to tell you a story. It's away from me. I'm going to go off script here. I was on the way across the bridge this morning, and Krista Tippett had an interview that it seems like, as always, was totally relevant to the theme for the Sunday service where I'm going to speak. And she's just so perfect. And it reminded me of an event. It really took the relevance of this whole sermon and this whole theme to my heart through an event that happened on this past Friday. And it was uncomfortable for me. If there was a priest here, I'll just say, okay, I confess, blah, blah, blah. I got in a tangle Friday with a millennial, okay? And at work, I run Justice Jobs of Maryland. We're a free nonprofit jobs office in Frederick, Maryland that helps people get jobs and then helps them keep those jobs, get good references, and move up to better jobs. So our ultimate goal is economic justice, not just a $10 job, but helping people eventually climb into the middle class, which was my story, starting with today's equivalent of a $10 job. On Friday morning, we were doing a workshop. And this weekend, I've come to realize through reflection that our workshops are totally baby boomer style workshops. We're trying to teach millennials, largely millennials, 2/3 to 3/4 of the clients we serve are millennials. And we're trying to teach them using the language of baby boomers. And I locked horns with a woman about 30 years old, who I will call Jessica, who was on topic. She was on topic. We've got a workshop with 9 people going about how to craft your elevator speech and how to interview well. And she kept getting into, and there I go, she kept, again, that's my interpretation, getting into one-on-ones with the person that we're focusing on for a moment, or the person's problems that we're focusing on for a moment, their elevator speech or whatever. And Jessica kept getting into these things where she'd be rapid-fire grilling the person 4, 6, 8, 12 questions in a row to the exclusion of everyone else in the room. And the other, the program manager was in the back of the room, and he did as I did. Several times we called on Jessica to pipe down and try to make it more of a group conversation, which is appropriate for a baby boomer workshop. This eventually, Jessica felt reprimanded, and she withdrew into her cell phone. And then I had to say, remember, the rule is that that we don't do social media while we're in here. And there was, by the time we left, there's this wall. And what I've learned over the last 48 hours of reflection is not that Monday morning I need to call Jessica in and tell her our way or the highway. What I need to do is not to say, we're in charge and you're receiving the service and you're going to do it the way we say, which is the equivalent of a managerial style that says, I'm the boss, you're the employee, do what I say, and don't complain about it, please. That's a baby boomer way of doing it. A millennial way of doing it is more bottom up. I got interested in millennials, and I'll leave that open-ended because I don't know the answer yet, but I need these millennials to help me craft a workshop that speaks to them rather than me prescribing for them. That's where I am in this now. I got interested in millennials a couple of years ago in a class at American University. We had 1 week we had a guest speaker named Tom Walter, who is the founder and former chief officer, still the owner, but the former chief executive. So that tells a story. And he's currently the chief culture officer Tasty Catering. It's an employee-run business in Chicago that Tom still owns, but the employees are running. So about 10 years ago, two of Tom's millennial employees walked into his office and said, look, your employees have gotten together, and all 50 of us have decided that things have got to change around here or we're all out of here. Tom had a revolution on his hands, and he was going to lose his company because he was going to lose the catering know-how to run that business if he didn't, if he just fired them all. And so he opened his mind to their criticisms, and what they were complaining about was things like no transparency into the company's profitability. They were complaining about being excluded in decision-making that affected them, and about being tasked with responsibilities that they had no authority to really carry out. They're complaining about an org chart that had too many opaque layers, where most employees' bosses' boss didn't even know the employees two levels down. So over the next 18 months, Tom Walker's employees worked in teams to radically reinvent Tasty Catering. And Tom facilitated that process, but he didn't run it. Over the 18-month period, he facilitated his own removal as CEO. And there is no CEO now. It's a different org chart. It's bottom up. He became the newly invented chief culture officer, not as a way of just keeping him around or putting him out to pasture, but he earned that role from his employees by facilitating open-mindedly and learning about the 21st century workplace and adapting to its demands. And he says that his most important contribution to that whole process was to create an environment for radical change that was more than cosmetic change, for that to actually happen. And the new Cape Tasty Catering, which I visited last summer, looks entirely different from the old one. They have weekly meetings of the entire company, right down to rank and file employees, all 70 people in the same room. And in those weekly meetings, the department managers report out their department's income and expenses for that week, how they save money, and the weekly bottom line for the company is calculated right there in front of everybody, in complete transparency. Divisions and departments meet every week, and everybody's ideas about how to save money and improve services are heard and incorporated into the plan, and everybody participates in a profit-sharing plan where bonuses are paid in real time and not next quarter or next year. Full inclusivity. Employees in the field know that they have the authority to make a customer happy that day, and that they'll never be second-guessed when they get back to the plan, even if it was a wrong decision. Authority that's commensurate with responsibility. A great idea for corporate America to think about. And the org chart is integrated from top to bottom by this chief culture officer, Tom Walter, who knows the names of everybody in the company. I walked around with him that day and it was phenomenal. He checks in with folks if they go home sick to make sure their child care is taken care of, not to make sure they're sick. He holds an AANA meeting with employees who qualify for those ventures twice a week and on company time. His main job is to make sure that no employee gets left out of the loop on any decision that's central to them. And since 2008, Tasty Catering has won award after business and industry award with names like America's Best Small Companies, the American Psychological Association gives an award that they won, Psychologically Healthy Workplace Award, and the Indiana Department of Commerce's award, Coolest Place to Work, 2015. Now, what does that employee revolution at Tasty Catering have to do with the millennial generation that I'm working with in Frederick? It's the generation, the millennials, who are now 15 to 35 years old, and so many baby boomers seem to have trouble communicating with them. Tom Walter is an example of a baby boomer who recognizes that when you go to communicate with people and work with people who are different from you, you're going to get a lot more mileage out of learning their language rather than trying to convince them to learn yours. As my wife says, you're going to catch a whole lot more flies with honey than you will with vinegar. Tom Walter's employees were so fed up with his top-down, hierarchical, bureaucratic management style, they were millennial-led. Tom could have held out for his own position as a point of pride and just fired everybody, but with 70 or 80 employees, he wouldn't have had a company left and he'd gone under. By working with his people, by learning the language of the millennials generation, Tom saved his company. For me to continue to serve millennials, to save, that's a point of eventually saving my company, to learn their language and serve them in the language that they speak. That's why it's relevant to me. But on a much broader scale for all of us, my thesis this morning is that in our country and in our world, we're at a point in history where we need to save not our companies, but our country and our world. And the ones who are going to save our country and our world are in the next 30 years are the millennials, who are now the oldest of whom are now 35 years old. The brightest and the best of the millennial generation are going to dominate policy and program for the next 30 years. By 2048, 30 years from now, 39% of the U.S. population will be millennials. Imagine the voting power they will have. And despite being dissed by the media for supposedly not voting, millennials as a bloc were largely responsible for getting Barack Obama nominated in 2008, and they made a strong showing for Bernie Sanders in 2016. These are just harbingers of the strength that millennials are going to wield over the next three decades. Contrary to what we read in much of the media, and contrary to some of our own isolated experiences like mine on Friday morning, millennials as a class are not singularly lazy, self-obsessed, and narcissistic and entitled. They're also, as individuals, open-minded, liberal, expressive, upbeat, and overtly passionate about equality. This is an excellent list of qualities for a generation that is coming into dominance now and that we're going to have to depend on to save the world. Saving the world. Yep, that's what I just said we're going to have to depend on the millennials to do. About saving the world, academics William Strauss and Neil Howe have written a lot about what has become known as Strauss-Howe generational theory. I like to call it fourth turning theory, which is what they call it, fourth turning theory. This is a theory of history that breaks history down into 80-year cycles. So every 80 years, about the length of a human lifetime, there's a complete cycle. And within each cycle, you can generally break out four distinct generations that fit the same pattern each cycle. And what I'm really interested in is not whether fourth turning theory fits all the way back to the Middle Ages, which they suppose, but really whether it can tell me anything about what's to come in the next generation in the course of our lifetimes, and tell us about the role that the newest adult generation might play in human history as it comes up. Let's go back and look at the last cycle, the last 80-year cycle. Four generations before the millennials started being born in around 1982 or so, my grandparents' generation was the greatest generation, and they were born between 1905 and 1925. They came of age with World War II. This was the generation that stood up to Nazi fascism and administered the Marshall Plan and saved the world that time. It was also the generation that invented the nuclear bomb and fashion consumerism, so we have to be careful about how we think about history. Theirs was a hero generation, a generational archetype that fourth turning theory says comes along once in every 80 years. Hero generations enter adulthood in times of crisis, like the greatest generation did with the Great Depression and World War II. Next came the silent generation, my parents' generation, born between 1925 and 42. The silent generation entered adulthood in America's golden age, an age of capitalism and an age of the Cold War. So it was just considered an adaptive archetype instead of a hero archetype. Next came the baby boomers, yours truly, who were idealists and had characteristics like awakening and consciousness revolution. And after that came Gen X, my nieces and nephews, which are characterized by and the time is characterized by an unraveling by the culture wars and by postmodernism and neoliberalism. According to fourth turning theory, we're now ripe for a next greatest generation. And that, for me, is where the millennials have to come in. The question is, where is this next dominant generation? What are they going to do in human history? I must predict, perhaps because I'm an idealistic baby boomer and I'm going back to that, but I must hope that the millennials will rise to the occasion and fulfill their calling as the next greatest generation. Maybe the millennials didn't get us into this mess, but by default, they're the ones who are going to have to get us out of it, because time and thermodynamics dictate that the torch, we're getting older and the torch is now being passed to them whether I like it or not. Now, where's the data for this prediction that the millennials will be the next greatest generation and get us out of our current fix? Well, the millennial generation that's coming into fullness today strongly resembles the last hero generation that put the world back together just when things seemed lost in the 1940s. Millennials, who are 15 to 35 now, they have come and are coming into adulthood and into dominance at a time of crisis with the so-called war on terror, a war that apparently has no end, the Great Recession, and the explosion of nationalist anger that has been simmering and expanding in this country since Nixon took the South in 1972, and really across the world. The militarism, the consumerism, and the racism inherent in those crises strongly resemble the problems that faced my grandparents' greatest generation in the Great Depression and in World War II. Both the greatest generation and the millennials are civic-minded generations with a sense of duty to make things better. These two generations share the characteristics of being open-minded, liberal, self-expressive, upbeat, and overtly passionate about equality. A few minutes ago, I referred to the millennials as that generation that so many baby boomers seem to have trouble communicating with. That suggests there's a communication problem going on. What we have here is a failure to communicate. It reminds me of the failure to communicate that happened between me and my parents. I was right at the end of the baby boomers, but I really got on my mom and dad's nerves when I hung the American flag upside down on the wall of my bedroom. I could still demonstrate, even in that limited scope. It was communication. The word communicate comes from a Latin prefix co, meaning together, and from an Indo-European root, if you want to go back that far, that means mind. And so communicate or co-mean would mean something like minds together, putting our minds actually together, transferring them one into the other. Anytime I'm having trouble communicating with someone, it's just as likely that it's my problem as much as it is theirs. It's a two-way street. So one of the points I'm proposing, practical points today, is that many baby boomers need to open our minds to the fact that millennials have just as much to offer as any other generation that's ever walked the face of the earth, which is a recognition I was demanding from my parents with that display. Likewise, I'm calling on millennials to open their minds to the fact that although baby boomers, the silent generation, and Generation X helped get us into the mess we're in, many of us would and will make strong allies and students to their creativity in helping get us out of this mess. I'm not quite ready to say that time has passed us completely by. I don't want that yet, but I am ready to accept the reality that millennials are going to dominate public policy and the corporate world for the next 30 years. It's a fact of life. The older generations are waning in our influence, and we're all going to be allies or students at best, and certainly not creative leaders in getting us out of this current social, environmental, military mess. Social, environmental, and military are not words that I called up at random. Those three factors remind me of Dr. Martin Luther King's evil trinity of racism, unbridled materialism, and militarism. racism, unbridled materialism, and militarism. That's what he called the evil trinity. His evil trinity is just as vibrant today, only sometimes in more insidious ways than it was when he first uttered those words in 1968. The mess that falls to the millennials is a daunting one. Socially, racism continues to rear its ugly head in the reactionary nationalist politics on both ends of the spectrum. Despite King's warning about unbridled materialism and the religion of consumerism to which I dedicated much of my life, we have continued our march towards a looming environmental disaster for the species and the planet. And as for King's militarism, like Ike Eisenhower's warning of a military-industrial complex is a distant memory that few people remember, functionally irrelevant if you read the papers or have a nephew in Afghanistan like I do. So that is one practical thing we can take from this message this morning. Baby boomers need to listen to millennials, and millennials need to listen to baby boomers, and we need to communicate and cooperate and learn from each other in putting this world back together. That is a matter of practice, how we can relate to each other in the world this coming week. So that's why I call that a practical thing that we can take home with us. I will be applying that starting Monday morning at Justice Jobs of Maryland. There is a second thing that I hope you'll take with you this morning, and it's a little more ephemeral. It's not so much practical as spiritual. It's something that we can hold in our hearts and minds in the coming weeks, in the coming months, in the coming years. If you get nothing from this sermon this morning but this, I want you to know that there is hope. If the seeming patterns of history are in any way true, then the world needs saving about once every human lifetime. What comes around, goes around. The last generation fought World War II. The one before that fought the Civil War. And the one before that fought the American Revolution. Now that data makes for a scary forecast because the last three hero generations fought nasty wars. And humans can't afford to keep solving our problems by killing each other with the tools we have at our disposal for doing that in 2018. But I must hope, I have to hope, that millennials, with their creativity, with their open-mindedness, their liberality, their overt passion for about equality for all people, and with the technology that is today at their disposal, which has to be usable for something besides mindless entertainment, these millennials will find new ways of solving problems that have eluded humanity, the ways of solving them have eluded humanity up to now. And as they do what will become their life's work, which is no less than crafting a quantum leap in the evolution of humankind, I stand here as a willing ally, and more than that, as their willing student. I can have hope in humanity because I have hope in the millennials. Blessed be, and may it be so. I invite you to stand in body or in spirit.